Good afternoon. My name is Susan Muirhead, and today I'll be reading part one of the News Gazette, dated for this date, Tuesday, December 23rd, 2025. As always, we begin with today's top stories. The first headline reads, University of Illinois Police, she would just light up a room. Search for driver in fatal hit and run continues. Vigil held for victim. This article is written by Luke Taylor. He can be reached at ltaylor at newsgazette.com. That's his email address. This article is based out of Urbana. The search for the driver involved in a hit and run incident that left a pedestrian dead on Saturday continued Monday as family and friends of the deceased came together for a memorial. The victim was identified by Champaign County Coroner Lori Brower as 22-year-old Perry, P-E-R-R-Y, Lee, L-E-E, Jr., of Urbana. But friends and family say the individual went by the name of Aurora Taylor. She was a Spitfire. Whenever she walks in the room, it always shined. If you was down, she was going to lift you up. Never want to see anyone alone. Take the shoes off her feet and give them to someone else, said Miss Taylor's mother, LaShonda Smith. Somebody struck her down from drinking and driving. Please, I ask you all, please stop drinking and driving. It's not only your life that you are tearing apart. It's millions of others. At around 2:13 a.m. Saturday, officers from the Urbana and University of Illinois Police Departments responded to a crash at the intersection of Green Street and Matthews Avenue near the Illini Union. According to police, the initial investigation indicates that a U of I police officer was conducting a routine patrol of campus and traveling east on Green when a red Buick Verano entered the intersection from Matthews, sped down the southbound one-way street, going the wrong direction, and collided with the squad car. The wrong-way vehicle spun off the road and onto a sidewalk northeast of the intersection, where five individuals were about to enter the crosswalk. One of the pedestrians was struck by the vehicle, and the driver fled on foot. The U of I officer and the pedestrian, later identified as Ms. Taylor, were both taken to the hospital. Ms. Taylor was pronounced dead at Carl Foundation Hospital at 9:44 a.m. Saturday. Ms. Taylor's father, Perry Lee, said police had notified the family that a suspect had been identified, but that the search for that individual was ongoing. Once I found out, that just changed my life forever. It'll never be the same. She brought life to everyone she came around. To know her was to love her, Lee said. Anywhere she went, she'd get a stranger's shirt off her back. She'd get a stranger shirt off her back in the middle of the winter. That's just how loving she was. She'd give a shirt. Sorry. She can't never be replaced. Miss Taylor had plans to become a teacher because Lee said she just wanted to help people. Aria Pleasure said she was mourning not only all the good her close friend did in the world, but all the plans and goals Miss Taylor was set to achieve. Sometimes people say, like, social anxiety is afraid of her. She was very outgoing. If anyone ever needed help, she was going to be there, Pleasure said. Whenever she feels like somebody has something on that looks good, or whenever she sees someone doing a good job, she's never going to let that moment pass. She's going to go, hey, I love your outfit. Hey, you're doing a great job. Are you running? How far left do you have? She's such a bright light in everybody's life, and it doesn't matter if you're a stranger or if you've known her for 20 years. That's exactly how many of her friends and family described Miss Taylor, a bright light everywhere she went. She would just light up a room. She always just had this glow about her, and people were always just so attracted to her, said Bree Griffiths, another friend. She was such a creative person, very talented, very driven, and she was just somebody who cared deeply and passionately about the people in her life, and she would put others first, and she would make sure that other people were okay, and just had this amazing sense of who she wanted to be. She was absolutely making that for herself. And I'm just so proud of her. Griffiths described just spending time talking, laughing, and taking Polaroids together. Nova Bowler, Griffith's girlfriend and another close friend of Miss Taylor's, remembers those times too, as well as plenty of nature walks and skating together. She'll remember her friend as someone that brightens up literally every room, who she's with and where she's at. Extremely talented, musical heavy, obsessed with fashion and makeup and being very authentic to whoever she was at any time, unapologetically. And there's a few photographs that accompany this article. There are two people outdoors, it looks like, in winter coats, and they're holding yellow gold stars, looks like balloons. The caption reads, LaShonda Smith and Perry Lee, parents of Aurora Taylor, pray Monday at a memorial vigil for their daughter who was struck and killed in a crash, in the early hours of Saturday morning. And there's two other photos. One is of, looks like a frame with like three or four pictures in it on the ground, and there's candles and flowers on the ground. And another photo is faces holding candles, people standing around, looking a bit forlorn, of course. The caption reads, friends and family gathered at a memorial for 22-year-old Aurora Taylor of Urbana on Monday evening, placing candles and flowers as well as releasing balloons at the site of the crash that led to her death. Those photos are all taken by Luke Taylor of the News Gazette. The next headline reads, it's just a photo front and center of the News Gazette. Braggin writes, Illini 91, Missouri 48, stocking stuffer. It's a photograph of the stands emptying in the background, but still lots of people there. And it's a large kind of group photo of the men's U of I basketball team. They're kind of all smiling and standing around a trophy with a basketball on the top of it. The caption reads, members of the number 20, or that's number 20 ranked, Illinois men's basketball team celebrate with the Braggin Rights trophy after the Illini routed Missouri 91-48 on Monday night at the Enterprise Center in downtown St. Louis. That photo's taken by Scott Ritchie for the News Gazette. The next headline reads, My Turn by Mike Carroll, M-I-K-E, last name Carroll, C-A-R-R-O-L-L. Now, typically My Turn is in the B section of the paper, but today there's something on the front page. Holiday shopping downtown was once the thing. And Mike writes out of Tuscola, which is where I believe where he lives. For a small town, young squirt in the 1950s and early 60s, Christmas shopping was with family in Champaign. It was like a trip to another planet. Walking into those multi-story department stores, I was dazzled by visually stunning displays of dream gifts beyond my financial means, which were meager to none, such as expensive leather goods, cashmere sweaters, and grand toys, especially this Howdy Doody puppet sporting bright red cowboy boots to die for. There were colorful Christmas lights winking and blinking everywhere, joyful sounds of Christmas music filling every store, even piped out into the streets, lifting spirits, happy shoppers everywhere, rushing here, piling up gifts there. Somebody had money. Wow, I thought, this must be one really special birthday party we're all celebrating. Unbeknownst to me at the time, this was near the end of the golden era of brick-and-mortar retail stores, the memory of which still anchors me reassuringly to a fixed time and place where life seemed simpler. The big box stores and shopping malls were emerging, just starting to take business from downtown retail. Today, the internet eats brick-and-mortar retail like a plague of locusts devouring wheat fields in Depression-era Oklahoma. True, there were mail-order catalogs at the time, Sears, Roebuck, and Company, Spiegel, Montgomery Ward, but ordering from them was no fun. They couldn't compare to holding the real thing, closely examining it for size, feel, color, then shaking it all around to test build quality, like I did to Howdy Doody. Those grand stores had actual merchandise to pick up and examine from every angle, plus salespeople to answer questions and talk to, such as the clerk who asked me to please quit shaking the Howdy Doody puppet so hard you'll dislodge its head. I especially remember three major stores, Lewis's, Robeson's, and Kuhn's. As a little nipper in the early 50s, I remember walking into Kuhn's and looking skyward through the central core of four open floors to a massive, beautiful stained glass dome seemingly floating over open space, and I immediately wondered how they cleaned it. Kuhn's had great clothes, an elevator with an actual operator, plus a pneumatic, snake-like brass tube system that, when your payment was fed like lunch to the monster, it disappeared with a whoosh sound to who knows where. Minutes later, the snake spit the lunch back out with your change. Magic. Robeson's, a five-story department store on the southeast corner of Church and Randolph, and Lewis's, a four-story department store on the southeast corner of Park and Neal, were downstate's answer to Chicago's Marshall Field's massive store, only better as it was easier to park. My favorite spot in Robeson's, besides the luncheonette, or its luncheonette, was this little book nook area packed with the varied high-quality selection, especially large coffee table books with color pictures of exotic locales in the world. Immersed in one about rural England, I drifted off into a fantasy of living in the Cotswolds, mowing my grass roof, shearing sheep, enjoying tea and scones at four, and roaring around those narrow, twisty rural lanes in one of those fine English convertible roadsters with Julie Christie riding shotgun hanging all over me. Sweet. Speaking of luncheonettes, we had a few favorite places in downtown to eat. Mom liked Moy's Tea Garden, catty corner from Lewis's. The only thing on the menu I'd eat was fried rice. But when I asked for ketchup for my fried rice, the waitress burst out laughing, in Chinese, I think. My food preference was West, just across the street from Moy's, a small lunch counter inside Walgreens, now Hamilton Walker's. They had a great cheesy toast and didn't laugh when I asked for ketchup. Interestingly, most of the Christmas gifts I bought were at Walgreens. There was Old Spice cologne for Dad. Bought that for him every Christmas and birthday for years. When Dad passed away some 40 years later, I discovered what I believe to be the world's largest collection of unopened Old Spice bottles of cologne in his closet. Unfortunately, by the time of Dad's death, the market for vintage Old Spice had collapsed. On one memorable Christmas trip, we ate at the Count or Courtyard Cafeteria, a gleaming stainless steel diner like the old chuck wagon on the south side of Hill, one half block west of Neal. After feasting from their excellent smorgasbord, Mom went to pay. Scribbling away on a counter check, which was a blank check for a no-named bank, you had to write a bank's name on the check. Mom was oblivious to both the sign that said no checks and the cashier adding especially counter checks. Mom didn't flinch as she tossed the check to the cashier and said, "If you want to get paid, you'll take this," and proceeded to walk out the door. Scared, Melinda looked over at me and I kind of whispered, "Run." And we hustled out and ran to the car. Mom calmly walked away, seemingly immune to fear of being thrown to the ground and handcuffed. Those iconic buildings are largely gone as shopping meccas mostly repurposed, and with them seems lost the special pleasures of the sights, sounds, and joy of mingling with crowds at Christmas in these circus-like multi-story stores, always thinking of others on Christ's birthday, looking for that special gift for loved ones, but first shaking it really hard to check for its build quality. Mike Carroll of Tuscola is a retired circuit judge and former state's attorney in Douglas County. The next headline reads from Bob Asmussen. He's into the ring of things. This article is based out of Champaign. Ask a Salvation Army bell ringer why they are helping out and you will hear all sorts of reasons. For Jeff Newton, J-E-F-F, last name Newton, N-E-W-T-O-N, it is gratitude and keeping active. "I'm not the kind of person that likes to sit around the house," Newton said. I like to be around people, laugh, joke, whatever. For Newton, ringing the bell is a labor of love. I meet people and I speak to everybody, he said. It's enjoyable to me because I'm a people person. The gratitude part of his story goes back oh so long ago. The now 78-year-old was living in Chicago with his family. Disaster struck the Newtons as a fire wiped out their home. The Salvation Army came through for the Newtons in a big way. They got me and the kids, took us to a hotel. We stayed there for a month. They fed us. They gave us clothing, Newton said. Pitching in. Newton has been in the Champaign area for almost a decade. He lives in New Century Estates, a mobile home park on Windsor Road. Two of his children, Maurice and Rachel, live in the community. A third, Jeffrey Jr., is in St. Louis. He has grandchildren and great-grandchildren spread between CU, Chicago, and St. Louis. Newton is in his first year working with Champaign Salvation Army. He spent 6 hours Friday morning and afternoon with the familiar, red kettle at the entrance of Schnucks on Mattis Avenue. Newton is retired after a career in sales. That's my talent, Newton said. I'm not an electrician, I'm not a carpenter, but I can talk, I can sell. He spent 2 decades at McCormick Place, setting up shows and breaking them down. Years of heavy work have taken their toll on Newton's knees. Walking a long distance is difficult, so he gets around mostly on a bike. Newton mans the kettles 2 or 3 times a week, as many as they let me, he said. Christmas Eve is the final day, and Newton will be out ringing the bell and saying good morning to passersby. When he is asked, how are you doing? Newton answers, I'm doing great. I'm 78, and I woke up this morning. I'm not looking at the roots. I'm smelling the flowers right now. He's been out even in the nastiest of weather. He sings Christmas songs. Keeps me busy, and I don't think about the cold, he said. Newton plans to ring again next Christmas season. Ringing starts a week or two before Thanksgiving. I'll go until I can't go anymore, he said. Nearing the goal. The bell ringers meet at the Salvation Army Church, located at 502 North Prospect Avenue, before heading to their designated spots. Each day is a new adventure. There are snacks and drinks at the church for the bell ringers. They are reminded not to have their cell phones out while ringing. Kenyon Civils is in his third year as the Salvation Army Corps Officer Administrator. It's one of the hallmarks of Christmas, Civils said at the bell ringers, of the bell ringers. Here in Champaign County, we're no exception. It helps us sustain the work that we do throughout the entire year. How many bell ringers were there in Champaign County? The short answer is not enough, Civils said. The goal for Champaign County this season is to raise $200,000. Going into the weekend, the total raised was $165,000. Getting there, Civils said, we do need a last push. People have been generous. The weather has not been generous. Saturdays are always the best days, and a full Saturday was lost to a blizzard and part of a second. There have been random acts of anonymous generosity. At the Rantoul Walmart, when the Rantoul Police Department was ringing, someone dropped in 11 $100 bills. Another night, there were 11 $100 dropped at a variety of locations. On a typical day, 15 bell ringers are posted across 20 locations throughout the county. If anyone is going to ring, dress warm, dress appropriately for the weather, Civils said. Volunteers are there for 2 hours. Paid ringers stay for 6. Positive personalities like Newton are a plus. You want folks who are engaging, Civils said. Be pleasant, be kind, be cordial, be welcoming. Interested in helping out? You can go to registertouring.com. Maybe it should be register storing. I hope it's not a misprint, but the paper says registertouring.com. Bob Asmussen is a college football reporter and columnist for the News Gazette. He can be reached by phone or email. His phone number is 217-393-8248. That's 217-393-8248. Or by email at asmussen@newsgazette.com. The next headline reads, Top of the Morning, Something to Get You Going Today, courtesy of Vice President Jim Rosso. Illinois football mostly was a mess when Josh Joseph was a student. Time spent at Cam's and Bub's was much more memorable than Memorial Stadium, where Lou Tepper's Josh and Tara Joseph teams routinely lost. It was terrible, without question, the 1997 grad and proud member of Sigma Alpha Mu said. It's wonderful to see how the program is going now. Joseph and his family were thrilled when Brett Bielema's Illini were booked for the Music City Bowl, the popular bar they own, in Nashville, Tennessee. JBJ's. That's JBJ. JBJ's on 405 Broadway Avenue is a 10-minute walk from Nissan Stadium and will host an orange and blue takeover next Tuesday. The Illini-themed party starts at noon and features menu items with ties to campus town. Lion fries, blue guy, etc. The Bon Jovi Bar can best be described as a rock venue meets Cheers, said Tara Joseph, T-A-R-A, Joseph, Josh's wife, noting it's the only alumni-owned bar on Broadway. The Josephs, in Nashville since 2019, opened JBJ's in 2024. The bowl game allows them to show off their deep Illini ties in the heart of Tennessee territory. We're very excited to host all the Illini fans and visitors from out of town, said Josh, who enjoyed the buzz created by the Illini men's basketball visit earlier this month. We want to make them feel at home. And there's one photograph that accompanies this article. It's of a large venue. Oh, and lots of people in it standing, looking at the camera. Just kind of a packed venue, and that's JBJ's in Nashville. That photo is provided. Questions, comments, suggestions for Top of the Morning, you can always get in touch of Jim Rosso through his email address, which is jrossow@newsgazette.com. Now, history. Area history. In 1925, the four-year-old son of Mr. and Mrs. Don Mason of Urbana caused more excitement than the neighborhood has experienced in a long time when, after accidentally setting the curtains afire from a lighted candle that had been left in a window, he became frightened and threw the candle on a bed. The fire department extinguished the fire by tearing down the remnants of the curtain and throwing the blazing mattress and bed clothing out of a window. In 1975, talks between Ozark Airlines and University of Illinois officials are raising hopes for a new passenger terminal at Willard Airport. Ozark now boards about 10,000 passengers per month and deplanes about the same number. Congressman Ed Madigan told the News Gazette that a newly passed airport aid bill authorizes federal grants for passenger terminal facilities. In 2010, at least three Champaign residents will vie for the District 5 council seat in April, but none of their names will be on the ballot. Catherine Emanuel, Paul Faraci, and Jim McGuire filed papers to run as write-in candidates for the soon-to-be-vacant city council seat at a first deadline to file as a candidate past Wednesday, but interested residents may still file to run as write-in candidates for the April ballot until February. That was in 2010. International history, today's highlight. On December 23, 1972, in an NFL playoff game between the Pittsburgh Steelers and the Oakland Raiders, Steelers running back Franco Harris scored a game-winning touchdown on a deflected pass with less than 10 seconds left. The Immaculate Reception, as the catch came to be known, is often cited as the greatest NFL play of all time. The next headline reads, actually, let's take a look at our weather forecast. Let's do that. We've got some warm-ish temperatures coming. Strange for Christmas, but that's the way it is today. 55 degrees, mostly sunny. West winds around 10 miles per hour with gusts up to 20 miles per hour. Becoming northwest. Wednesday, it'll be mostly cloudy, southeast winds 5 to 10 miles per hour, but the high will be 52, the low is 33. That's Christmas Eve. For Christmas Day, Thursday, December 25th, 57 will be the high, 47 is the low, mostly cloudy on Christmas Day, patchy fog in the morning. Friday, warmer still. The high will be 63, the low is 51, partly cloudy. And Saturday, the high will be 60, the low is 42, mostly cloudy. Next up, actually a photo. Bell-ringing mayors chip in. And there's a photograph of two people with the red smocks or aprons on, standing at a Salvation Army bell, or they have bells, and then there's the collection bucket. The caption reads, mayors from Urbana and Champaign, Deshaun Williams and Deb Finan, volunteered to ring bells for the Salvation Army of Champaign County on Saturday. The mayors were helping outside Schnucks in Urbana. Bell ringing at 21 locations in Champaign County continues through Christmas Eve. The next headline reads, from Jim Guy, shooting probe generated considerable heat, little light. Now that the Brown University mass shooting manhunt is over, a gunman committed suicide, the search into why begins in earnest. Why did Claudio Manuel Neves Valente, a one-time graduate student in physics at Brown in the early 2000s, open fire in a campus building on a group of students studying for final exams and then travel to Boston to kill a former classmate, a professor at MIT? Who was he? What drove the rage that resulted in mindless murder and ended in self-destruction? The facts can be expected to be both fascinating and familiar. Dweebish middle-aged man of great possibility and perhaps little accomplishment strikes out against targets of apparent resentment. Note to the qualifiers, perhaps an apparent, quote-unquote, applied to the shooter. Everyone will have to wait and see how they fit. That, of course, raises other questions concerning both good reporting and wild speculation generated by the 24-hour news cycle and social media outlets. Social media's questioning games, or guessing games, excuse me, included speculation that Brown, the institutional victim, was somehow complicit in protecting the shooter, who was suggestively identified as a member of the student body. That's a kind of thing that could have caused an innocent party to be targeted for retaliation. Nature abhors a vacuum. If there is no good information to share with the public, loose talk will take its place, a circumstance exacerbated in this case by the public posturings of inept university and local law enforcement officials. What happened is somewhat akin to the public's thirst for information after a fatal car crash or plane crash. People know the what, the plane crashed, but they want to know why. Was there a partisan political motive? Is this another act of terrorism? Does the shooter look old or young on the video? Was he familiar with the geography of the campus? Where is he now? Many questions piled on top of each other with no definitive answers. Unless the shooter is killed, captured, or commits suicide at the scene, it will be deja vu all over again the next time something like this happens, and it will. All the usual suspects will engage in similar feverish behavior. I'm Susan Muirhead, and this has been part one of the News Gazette, dated for this date, Tuesday, December 23rd, 2025. I'll be back to read part two with you shortly. It's always a pleasure to read with you. Thanks for listening, and I hope you have a wonderful day.